We're back with more of Lake Effect on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. David Mamet is one of this country's great playwrights, from plays such as American Buffalo to Glengarry Glen Ross to Oleana and Speed the Plow. Mamet's is a particularly American voice.
This weekend, a very early play from his canon is on stage at the Alchemist Theater. A Life in the Theater is directed by Jill Anaponicek, and it stars Jim Pickering and David Sapiro.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it is great to see you all here again. Thank you for coming in.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you for having us.
So, A Life in the Theater, and we're going to start out by hearing a scene from it. But first of all, Jill Anna, set us up. Where are we, and who are these two gentlemen playing?
These two gentlemen are playing a veteran actor and an up-and-coming actor.
So, Jim, are you the veteran actor?
I'm the veteran actor.
That's a great guess.
Yeah.
And we are at various points throughout a theater, on stage, off stage, backstage, dressing room.
Okay. Set up this scene, if you would.
Sure. Scene 19. Curtains open. John and Robert are standing in the wings dressed as Confederate soldiers. John is about to go on.
Ephemeris, ephemeris, huh?
What?
Ephemeris, ephemeris.
What are you saying?
Time passes.
What comes after? The men got together, ma'am, and we kind of thought you'd like to have this.
She says, thank you.
I'm aware of that. I think after that. What comes after that?
Your line?
Yes. Have you got a script?
What would I be doing with a script?
I'm going to go get a script.
Wait, I know. I know what the line is.
What?
After you give her the watch, right?
Yes.
Right, you give her the watch. You give her the watch.
And?
Look, you hand the woman the watch. Ma'am, we kind of thought that maybe...
The men all got together, ma'am.
Yes, and, this is ridiculous. You give her the watch. What's her line?
Thank you.
Oh, damn. You better get a script. You want me to?
Shh.
What?
Shut up. I'm trying to hear my cue.
What's happening?
I think I missed my cue.
What's happening?
Shh.
Can you see?
I'm going on. What do you think? I'm going out.
You want me to get a script?
I missed my cue.
Well, go out there. Go on.
I missed my cue.
Get out there.
Mrs. Wilcox, ma'am, the men all got together.
Curtain.
Oh, that's brilliant. And I know from my years backstage that those kinds of things happen quite often.
Sure.
Yeah. Mm. But not to you.
Never.
No. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So Jim and David never had that kind of
never.
Thing. Never needed the script.
No.
Really?
No.
That's
no.
The hard part is playing actors who don't know what they're doing.
It's right.
Yeah.
It's kind of a challenge.
I bet.
Erase stuff from our brains
right.
Before we start working.
Right. It must be tough, Jelena, to,
oh,
you know.
It's the hardest. It's just no fun.
No. Bad script.
Bad script.
Know. Yeah.
Yeah. It's fantastic. It's just fantastic. It's a joy every second.
And this is the first time you've done a so-called straight play, right?
It is.
And you
dive
into Mamet.
You should see the air quotes in the studio right now.
Everybody's going,
air quotes.
But you dive into Mamet. How fun.
Right? It makes perfect sense when you think about it.
Yeah.
No, these guys are musicians with their voices. They move their bodies like dancers. It's
Wow.
Yeah. It's the same.
Did you guys know that?
Well, that's the first that I've heard that now, but yeah, it's been a joy, as Jelena has said, that diving into this and working with talented, creative people who like to have fun, don't take themselves too seriously, but take the work seriously, and just, this script is very true. we can joke about it, but it's so true. We find it more and more true,
mm-hmm.
and the line between us as actors and a director rehearsing this play and what's happening on the stage, it blurs tremendously, to the point where I need to be careful of not corny lines from the script that are applicable to what is going on for real in the theater at that moment.
In the actual
and
rehearsal.
So many of them are.
Yes.
Right. That's the difficulty.
When did Mamet write this? What part of his? Is this early on? Or?
It's very early. It came immediately after American Buffalo.
We have a suspicion that he was writing it before American Buffalo, and then American Buffalo hit the world, and he exploded with David Mamet, and then we think maybe he finished it after that. But that's speculation. I just got a feeling that
right. It absolutely has that feeling.
It is contemporary to that.
Okay, so this is quite a while ago, and Mamet before Glengarry Glen Ross, and all of the famous, swear-laden,
yes.
I know there's a lot of that in here, too, but it's more...
Oh, this is very, this is extremely laid back as far as that's concerned.
Right.
Yeah, no, there's just a just a few little things.
Choice words. Right. Yeah, choice words.
Yeah, some people have called it a softer, gentler mammoth. And a doily, a lace doily, I think,
right.
is, was one review
lace doily,
I read.
David Mammoth, you don't think of those two things together.
You know, and you too, I have to say. I don't think of lace doilies very much. No,
thank you. I don't think I'd want to be
more like a couple of catcher's mitts.
Right.
Yes, exactly. That kind of just like well-burnished leather.
Yeah, yes. Okay. Yes. Yes. What you said.
Right.
That's what we're going for.
Right.
Yeah, well-burnished leather. So, as David was saying, you know, the line blurs so much with this. Particular challenges for you, Jim, with this? I mean, you have had a life in the theater.
Right. Yeah. No, it's you have instantaneous stuff to call on, really. I've been intrigued with this play for a while. For one thing, it's seldom done. I know it was done in Milwaukee at some point, but
a while ago.
And it just felt right to, because I wanted to play this part. And I was talking to Aaron Kopek, who runs some Alchemist Theater. We were talking about something else this summer, and we just sort of were speculating on what we'd like to do. And I said, well, I've always wanted to do a life in the theater if I could get some theater to want to produce it. And he said, well, I have a theater. And I said, are you kidding? He said, no, we could probably do that here. And so then we started to work on it. And he said, yeah, and we could get David to do it. And I said, great, that'd be fine. It'd be lovely. And then we said, we'll probably need somebody to direct the things. And I think probably an opera person.
Right, right.
Exactly, the logical choice.
Right there. Yeah.
I had worked with Juliana Renaissance when I was doing the Kreutzer Sonata, and she was musical director, and that was one of the most wonderful collaborations of five people, two musicians, a music director, the director Marie Kohler, and me. And we were so intermingled in the demands of that production and trying to figure out in terms of what the music should be when and how one scene is more emphasized than the other and what should accompany it and so forth and so on, that, you know, I thought, well, it'd be just be great to have her in the room and watching this thing to see what she sees. Little did we know that she would come in with a completely – she would just have the whole thing like worked out in her mind.
Right.
we were kind of grateful about that.
Yeah, I was going to say, no, you didn't know that about her.
No, we had exchanged ideas. We had exchanged a number of ideas, and she indulged some of ours, and then she said, now here's what I think is happening in this play. And we went, okay, we'll do that.
All right. And so what do you think is happening in this play?
Well, we talked about kind of the conveyor belt of life that we all board it when we're born, and we're all going to, you know, reach the end at some point, and there are people ahead of us and behind us at all times, and so that this story is actually an eternal cycle. It has an older actor mentoring a younger actor, but if there were to be a sequel, the younger actor would now be the older actor, and there would be someone new in that place. And if there were a prequel, the older actor would be the younger actor mentored
right.
by. And so that there's this kind of eternity to it, and has a sense of life flashing before one's eyes.
This is what she brought to it. This was not an idea that had struck me, but it makes so much sense and it resounds through the whole play, I think.
The play is made of 26, you know, it's a one-act play. It has 26 scenes. So it has some scenes that are just barely one beat long.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just five lines and that's a scene. And so it kind of has this sense of if you were, like I said, falling off a skyscraper and your life were flashing before you hit the ground, what would you remember of 40 years making theater? What are the things that pop into your mind? And some might be a little longer and some are barely anything. And so we're hoping that the piece feels like it has this inevitability.
Here's one of them, just what we were talking about. The scene we just did before was about three pages long, and this is page 7, scene 7. Robert enters. Good morning.
Morning.
Another day, huh?
Yes.
Another day. Another day. End of scene.
That's it, yeah.
See?
Yeah, exactly.
But you know what? Because it's funny because Jim and I met at The Alchemist this morning to drive down here, and that's what it felt like. You know,
another day.
It's like, hey, morning. How you doing? Good.
Yeah. Throw your bags in the car. Boom,
yep.
Boom,
boom. Let's go.
Yep.
Well, and you were saying about this inevitability and the life flashing, and I was thinking, well, it also could be like Sartre. You don't want it to be No Exit, you know, where it's just like this constant, oh, my God, here we are in hell's waiting room, you know.
Mm-hmm.
because this is also very funny,
as
well as
poignant.
Very
funny.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Although backstage in some theaters is a lot like Hell's Waiting.
Yeah, yes.
True.
That's why you get to go on stage and escape it. That's
escape
really
a little
happens.
Bit, yeah. Yeah. Sometimes what happens backstage is more dramatic than what's happening on stage.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
And I have found that to be true, and I know you probably have too.
And the irony is, since both of us are on stage all the time during this play, neither of us is ever backstage, so we don't have to worry about that.
Right. Right. We're confining the drama to the stage.
To what
the
you
stage.
Will see.
So good. Right. So tell me a little bit about who you guys are. Obviously, older actor, younger actor, the mentor-mentee mm-hmm, relationship, mm-hmm. but...
Mentee, I've never heard
mentee,
that.
I don't know
I've
if that's an actual
that
word, but
it
I believe
it
is. Yeah, okay,
it is.
It's on tape. Mm-hmm. But, you know, who are these guys?
Robert.
Robert, you know, I for all intents and purposes, Robert's me, mm-hmm. you know. One of the things we do is we see these two guys in a number of different plays. We see scenes from a whole number of different plays, which almost indicates to me that they're part of some repertory theater company. It could be in New York. It could be anywhere. That's one of the things about it is the language never tells you. We see Robert is definitely an actor of the theater, and we see John maybe starting to branch out into TV or film or something else. He has auditions for things that are a lot more like lucrative than what's going on in the theater. Whether John aspires to be a Robert or not, I doubt.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He would like to be a more successful Robert than
right.
Robert, I think,
right.
really. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think John is one who aspires to bigger and better things. And while he listens to the advice that Robert likes to dispense, I think he also feels like he's got an idea of where he wants to go. And yeah, I might listen to some of the things you say, but I think I know where I'm going. And as Jim just said, there are lines in there that suggest John has had film auditions and he's getting praise, he's getting great reviews and such, and seems to be, you know, really the shooting star in theater and beyond.
So is there some jealousy there on Robert's
part?
Oh,
I think so, yeah. I think which he kind of buries in trying to at least adopt the role of mentorship,
mm-hmm.
when sometimes he is and sometimes he just wants to lecture the kids and take them down a peg and so forth and so on.
Right.
But
yes.
One of the things that occurs to me is that during the scenes, how many scenes on stage are there?
Six.
There are six. Mm-hmm. Six of the 20 scenes are from different plays. The rapport that they have when they're on stage is terrific.
Yes.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? They even meet adversity together. When there are technical glitches, mm-hmm. they work it out on stage, you know, with all that adrenaline
right.
that goes on.
They are good actors.
Right.
These are good actors, seriously. And yeah. and
often this is done portraying them as not so good actors.
Right, right.
And not taking the actual acting that they're doing seriously, which I think does a disservice to the play. Mm-hmm. I think it's up to us to be mm-hmm. as good as we can be, don't
mm-hmm.
you?
Yeah, especially with a director like me. Right. you just really rely on the talent on stage
on the talent
to
of the
cover
actors,
up the shortcomings. Yeah.
No, but I think it's actually much more interesting if they're really good actors.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, because it doesn't become a caricature.
Exactly.
Then.
You know, this isn't Noises Off.
Right.
You know, as great
right.
as and funny as that play is, but this is not that. And I think by playing these scenes as real and as good as we can, it shows what we sometimes have to do. We have to take a script that isn't that great and do the best we can with it and make it good through the performance. And I think that's what we want to see out of John and Robert, that they are very talented. They can take, you know, the sow's ear and make a silk purse when it's possible.
Or at least a cotton purse.
Right, exactly. a purse of some sort.
Yes, other than a sow's ear.
Right,
yeah.
right.
Exactly.
So. The very first scene takes place just after they've come down from a performance and they're on their way out of the theater and they're talking to each other. And one of the things that scene does, I believe, is it earns empathy for both of these characters from the mm-hmm. audience. That's something that we have to maintain all the way through. Otherwise, the audience just departs. They are looking at something objectively. They're not being involved in the story that has a beginning, middle, and an end between these two guys. They have, in a way, sort of got to root for them, however pompous they may be, or, you know, however immature they may be, or whatever it is. We have to keep that going. So that's one of the requirements.
You have to be sympathetic.
Yeah.
And I think it goes back to what you were saying about playing this as really good actors trying to have a life in the theater. That allows us to care about you.
Yes, I think
right. You're not jokes.
Right.
Although there are jokes in the play. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
Well, I think the humor emerges from sometimes the rhythm of what's happening on stage. It's the way the words are knitted together. Some of it's situational. Sometimes it's just laughing at the awkwardness of two people trying to understand each other or trying to reach an agreement, and it's so uncomfortable that it's funny. There's so much lightheartedness layered through it, you know, all throughout.
And what's interesting to me, too, is that you see early David Mamet at the beginning of his his rising, you know, his ascendancy in the American theater. And you're seeing kind of an early work.
Yeah, but you're also seeing hints of the virtuosity of his dialogue.
Oh, yeah.
It's so cool.
Well, even in the scene we heard at the beginning of this, it's brilliant. The way he paces things, the way that the choice of words that he uses. I mean, there's almost nobody better who writes dialogue, I think.
Jim and I have talked that there's parts of it that the memorization and has come like really quickly because he meant it to be that way. And then when it slows down and it becomes more challenging, it's because he wants it to be more challenging. It's just, you know, he gets
You have
it.
To slow down in order for the meaning of what you're doing to get across to an audience. So it's good. Right. Shakespeare did that too. So Mamet was cheating.
No, that was his mentor. He learned from the best.
Yeah, in the continuum of playwriting, sure.
Exactly. Well, I can't thank you guys enough for coming in, sharing a little bit of this with us. I cannot wait to see it. I'm so looking forward to it.
Thank you.
Great fun.
And
break
a leg.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good.
David Mamet's A Life in the Theater opens Friday night at the Alchemist Theater in Bayview and runs through mid-October. It's directed by Jill Anaponicek and stars Jim Pickering and David Sapiro.